All right, welcome in December edition, horse racing happy hour. Louis Ribeau hanging out with you, Zach Zanner, alongside for the December and January shows here on the happy hour. Mike, deep in hibernation. I say that as a joke. I needed to take this morning off from the radio show that I do here in Louisville, and tomorrow Mike's sitting in both days for me. So doing a crappy job of hibernating so far. Just wanted to get to a couple of things this week. But Zach, how was Thanksgiving, my friend?
You know, we traveled to the Grand Canyon in an RV, and that is the American story. It's like 1,200 miles each way.
Are you still married?
Actually, it's better for my marriage. It's
well, there you go. Nice. Okay, great. There you go. Yeah. No, that works out then.
Yeah. How about you with the
kiddos? It was good.
You and...
Yeah, no, it was all right. My parents came to town, which is nice. And then, you know, we sort of settled into the Clark on Friday as a family, and
You
know, all those races on Saturday. So it was a nice, nice weekend. And then as soon as the races were over, Churchill Downs knocked down the entire track. The paddock, those pictures are, man, they are visually jarring. Yeah, they're jarring. If you've gotten used to being around that paddock, which I have, of course. And it made me happy that I made the decision to run down and leave my family upstairs and go in the paddock for the Clark. Because it occurred to me, they've been running Clark on that spot since 1875 with that paddock. And then, boom, it's going to be a different paddock. So I'm glad I went down there for the last version of that. Yeah, last rendition of that one. So, an interesting weekend. I wanted to concentrate, though, on Saturday. You know, we do get, a first-time grade one winner in the Clark. But I thought, you know, the story there was the last place finish for Rich Strike. But back coming off of the run in the British Cup Classic, probably just a little bit too quick of a turnaround. We gave up.
I was about to say, were you surprised that they decided to do that? I mean, he ran well in British Cup.
The two races before that, but he had the appropriate amount of time off. Frankly, on this show, we had talked about the better thing to do probably would have been just go straight to the Clark. Now, we got that fourth place check in the Breeders' Cup, so whatever. Dough is dough, but the... You know, it was a little surprising to see him do that. It was a chance at a second grade one. Really, we talked about it, the ramifications of that, the injection of Rich Strike into the three-year-old dirt male conversation had he been able to do it. And, frankly, now looking back at it, the shame of it is that Sonny Leone did what he did in the Lucas Classic instead of just winning the race. Because if he wins that 100%. Race, it's a very different conversation about that horse. And we're talking about it in a very different way. So it's really too bad that way. But, you know, Proxy gets that grade one horse we gave out on the show. It goes 1-7. Frankly, we told you to play 7-1-4 on this show. And so, you know, betting wise worked out good day for us, but same time, I don't think a Proxy anywhere near a grade one horse kind of showed what this field was, which was a grade two minus kind of field. Once we got to the gate, and I think unfortunately really highlighted by a poor effort. And I use the word effort, meaning totality of the run by Rich Strike. But I think just in the end, a tired colt, frankly, at that point. But then Saturday, we get into, you know, the first two, you know, those two preps in the Kentucky Jockey Club and in the Goldenrod at Churchill Downs for both the Derby and the Oaks. And we get instant coffee in one of the slowest races I've ever watched in my life. And
it's very slow.
It was very slow. And the shame of it is, last year, and I want people to remember, so some of these races are very good indicators of who's going to be good in the future, and some of them are not. So last year, the winner was Smile Happy, of course. And the second place horse was, I don't know, just a horse named Classic Causeway, who went on to win a grade one, and White Abario, who won the freaking Florida Derby. So it was a really freaking good race last year as far as predicting who was going to be good in the spring. Now, a lot of times those horses that run second in those kinds of races going two turns for the first time, for example, with a White Abario, with a Classic Causeway, come back as three-year-olds. They trained up well, a little bit of time off in the winter, come back, do two turns again, no problem. I expect we'll see some of that out of this group. The final time of this race for Instant Coffee, who had to really do some work to overtake horses and win, was a minute 45 and one. Last year, the winning time was sub 144.
Yep.
A full second slower. And now I want to be fair to Instant Coffee and the other horses in this race. Because maybe we find out that Instant Coffee is actually a pretty good horse. Maybe we find out that Curly Jack peaked earlier as a two-year-old, right? That happens a fair amount of times in horse racing as well. Does Hayes Strike turn out to be a good horse? Dennington, Higante, does Cyclone Mischief come back? Whatever that looks like going forward, could any of those horses, maybe Red Route 1, any of those horses turn into nice three-year-olds? Historicity tells us that there's probably one horse in here that's going to go win a grade one or a grade two. That's what it says. Usually coming out of this race in the spring, that's what we get. Who's that horse in this group? To me, it's going to be Instant Coffee. If he gets better, if he improves, he's going to be the one that does it. To me, this was actually a prove-it race for him, frankly, coming in. I thought of Curly Jack as the better horse as a two-year-old, and then we get the opposite, frankly. We get Instant Coffee by a length and a quarter at the end of that race.
Yep.
Clearly looking better. Yes, slow, but a reminder of who's won this race. Smile Happy last year, of course. Keep me in mind, Silver Prospector, Signalman, Enticed, McCracken, Aeroforce, El Kabir, Tapiture, Uncaptured, Gemologist. And the last Derby winner, of course, was 2009. In that fall, won the 2010 Derby in Super Saver. So it's not as though really, really good horses haven't come out of this race. They have. They absolutely have. Tis Wonderful is a winner of this race. So it isn't that the top of this race has to be a bad thing, even because of the speed. I think it actually points to, excuse me, that there was generally just a slower track that day. Because even on the Hoosier Philly side, her number, while considerably faster than the boys, wasn't exactly earth-shattering either. And I think she's the story of the weekend. You could talk about the Derby winner finishing last in the Clark. That happens a lot. And the Derby winner winning the Clark almost never happens.
Right.
So those two things we have to remind ourselves of. Not that he was 80-1 and didn't win the Clark. It's that he won the Derby and then didn't win the Clark like so many other freaking horses have. But Hoosier Philly is the story here. And Tom Amos, who is not a guy who walks around and exaggerates things and overthinks them and sells you something that you don't need, tells you it's not close. This is the best horse he's ever had. And when they get to the end of the questions about her, he says, yeah, I'm hoping in the spring we take another winner circle photo, but it's across the track. And that's the Derby circle, folks.
Yep, exactly.
And do you know what happened? The futures on fillies after that race in the Kentucky Derby future pool went from 80-1 to 29-1. People took Tom Amos at his word. That is a massive move in a parimutuel pool.
Yep.
That's absolutely no question the story of the weekend.
It's BDE, baby. It's like, hey, I'm laying it all the way out there. Yeah. I'm putting my rep out there to say, I think we got it. I think we got a chance at this.
Yeah. So,
and I mean,
the Smile Happy's winning time last year was 143.94. Hoosier Philly's time this year, the exact same, 143.94. She ran a Colts race as a 2-year-old.
Yeah.
That is worth mentioning. It is worth noting. I think the other part of this that's really interesting is Tom Amos and Edgar Morales have become a very, very good pair at Churchill Downs, at Indiana. Horseshoe Indianapolis, you know, that thing, Ellis Park. Will Edgar get to stay on this filly going into the spring? Or does he go to a more seasoned rider knowing what's at stake with a horse of this caliber? Can you keep a guy like Edgar freaking Morales on this horse? Or do you have to step it up just to give the horse the very best shot that she can have on the trail to the Oaks or on the trail to the freaking Derby? It'll be really interesting to watch what they end up doing with her. It sounds like she's going down to Fairgrounds. Amos takes a bunch of horses down there. You know, just better weather in New Orleans in the winter, what have you. I will be interested to see where they place her. Do they try a gun runner the day after Christmas? That's a really interesting spot. I don't know that I would, but it's at least available because if she runs, you know, late November and then she runs at the end of December, that's not a crazy turnaround. It's not unfair to the filly to find out if she can handle the boys again. Or for the first time, I should say. But, you know, run that kind of time again. You know, it's going to be X-Ray Yeho who's going to run in that race. Do you run her against that horse just to find out? Because I think he's the 100%. Derby favorite right now. He's the Derby favorite right now on the cold side. And so I think if you can go and do that and have confidence that if Tom Amos is telling you the truth that she's the most talented horse he's ever had, go figure it out. Go find out. I think the earlier races is the time to find out. Go find out if you're shoulder-to-shoulder with those colts. Go find out if that's a good track for her to take head toward the Derby trail or if she needs to go on the Oaks Trail. I've been on the show way too many times talking Oaks Trail, and I always say that I really prefer the fillies to stay on the Oaks Trail, but it's not my horse. it's not my training job. I think I would find out early on if I'm Tom Amos, if this filly is really shoulder-to-shoulder if those times are inflated because she's running against lesser fillies. But yep. Kudos to them. Look, I do think a couple years ago, some of you probably saw it. I wrote a piece in the newsletter in the LA Times about how to fix the point system. And then they did the opposite. And now they give out points to the top five spaces instead of the top three. My idea was to go to three and to give more points to the early races to encourage bigger fields. So rather than spreading out a point, no one benefits from getting 1 point in the Derby Trail. Right. No one benefits from getting 2 points in the Derby Trail. It doesn't help. It's not a realistic, tangible thing that helps you get over the edge and become Rich Strike and get into the Derby. No, he made the Derby because he finished third in a 100-point race, period. The conversation over. Right. The point of this is you entice them by making these 20- and 30-point races early on, upping the percentage of total points in the pool early on, and then people will be more likely to run their horses. If that gun runner was a 20-point race, a 25-point race, let's say, at the fairgrounds, I think you would see her in there. Because then they know all they got to do is finish second in a 50-point race and they're in the freaking Derby. That's pretty cool, man. That's a cool thing to be able to do. And so I think they've gotten this wrong so far. Obviously, they did a 30-point race with the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. I had no problem with that. Frankly, I'd make it a 40-point race. Really up those two-year-old races. Really give points to those horses that perform well late in their two-year-old year, especially once we get into November, December. Those can be pretty predictive for good runs as a three-year-old. And there's no shame in trying to do that. And so I think that, you know, for example, hoping to have our buddy Jose Contreras on next week on Los Ponies to talk Los Al Futurity, that shouldn't be a 10-point race. That's a Bob Baffert special for setting up the rest of the year with a three-year-old. That's the kind of path that so many good horses end up taking is in a race like the Los Al Futurity or the what's now called the Gunrunner at Fairgrounds or in that Smarty Jones or the Jerome on New Year's Day at Oak Lawn at Aqueduct, respectively. And so I would hope that they would start to look at these early races and instead of spreading the wealth like this, concentrate the wealth, frankly, and get the very, very best horses, even if it's not right next to the qualifying for the Derby. I agree that the races, you know, if you win the Santa Anita Derby, if you win the Arkansas Derby, if you win the Florida Derby, you should get 100 points. You should have a spot in the Kentucky Derby. I think that's a reasonable way to fill out the field. Yeah. But if you don't give people incentive to run their horses in November, December, January, I think you're not doing it right for the sport, and I think you're not doing it right for your event.
Well, when you think about the Gunrunner,
sure.
The last 3 years, it's been in the 70s, mm-hmm. partly cloudy, no moisture in sure, New point. Orleans. Yeah. This is horse racing season. This is right. perfect, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yep. Yeah, it's why the Santa Anita races are such good predictors too, right?
Yep.
Because the LA weather in the winter is really predictive of what we probably will have here in the spring if it's not raining, right? And so, you know, it is a good opportunity, Zach, you're right, to get horses used to those track conditions. We're looking at a wet one in Ozone Park on Saturday at Aqueduct, for example. And sometimes that's a good predictor too, right? And we've got horses running on that day that I really trust on a wet track or a dry track. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about how I'm approaching that sequence, in the sheet, trying to pick off a sequence with five or six different kind of combinations, that sort of thing, and really try to maximize our profit that way. But yeah, I think we need to have a serious conversation about what the Derby Trail looks like. I'm not against the point system at all. I want to be really clear about it. I think that going purely on winnings and including so many, you know, turf horses or whatever it might be that just take a one-off shot in the Derby isn't what this should be about. I've been on record here, and I know that people disagree with me. They'll call them chalky days. To me, I call them classy days, when the very best horses show up on the biggest days and they win the biggest races. I don't mind seeing great performances by great horses. It did not bother me that Flightline didn't pay a lot to win. I'd rather just see Flightline dominate the bleep out of horses.
So and the Breeders' better. Cup was insane.
That was great.
Right?
Like, he had a bunch of the very best horses win. That's what I want at the World Championship, period. And like, so I'll push back on that side.
When you say there that some of these races on Clark Day and Friday are slow, I mean, you have to factor in the fact that some of the best horses in the world skipped out on Clark to try to come in second to Flightline.
Like, yeah, sure.
That's and Rich Strike tries to go both ways. Like, it's like, man, you just ran arguably third in the race because Flightline was on its own race, right? Like,
you lost to Olympia, yeah, right? Yeah.
Yeah. and ran at a sprint, like full on sprint. That was one of the fastest races we've seen in a while, like for the wind and the out sprint. Like it was just, it's crazy.
Yeah. So, you know, it'll be fun watching. I love this part of the year where you start to put your rankings together. A reminder that this year, Mike and I are going to be doing side-by-side rankings at horseracinghappyhour.com. A little bit of a change from what we've been doing previously. I'm starting to poke at people to see if they'll be contributors to the website and see if we can't help them pub the things that they're working on as well. Yeah. But as we get into the handicapping here for the Cigar Mile, this used to be the last show that Mike did, but then we started making it the Clark show. Get into it with the Four Stakes. A reminder about our friends at Green Sheet Racing, greensheetracing.com. Check out all of their stuff up there. Great plans if you wanted to get it for a couple of months at a time. Great quarterly plans and those sorts of things. And, of course, every Saturday, grab the sheet. You'll find my sequence of the day. This Saturday, I'm going to be concentrating on what's called the Grand Slam at NYRA. And if you don't know what the Grand Slam is, essentially, they should call it the cycle, but they don't. So you're trying to hit singles, and then you're trying to hit a home run at the end. And so in the fourth leg, you have to pick the winner. Yep. And as long as you hit one of the top three horses in each of the first three legs, you hit the sequence. So it's not a huge payout. You're not going to get 70 to one. You're not going to get, 60 to one, like you might on a good pick five or whatever. But what it does is it allows you to win a bunch of ways as you go through the sequence. So in mine, for example, I have two horses, four horses, and then I single in the last because I'm going to try to maximize that winner at the end. And so the point of that is try to hit it two different ways, the first and second leg, and then hit it all three with that third leg, right? Maximize it, get six possible payouts on that bet, and really maximize a return on what might be, either a sort of like we just had. So we put in a pick three on Goldenrod and Jockey Club Day. And I said in the sheet, it's like favorite I'm against. And I'm like, I'm not. It's just one of those days. The best horses are probably going to win here. Hoosier Philly wins. Instant Coffee wins. It was just one of those days. So instead of that, we didn't play a 50-cent pick three. We played a $3 pick three. And it cost us $18. We got like 50 cents back. That's fine. If we know that's what the sequence is going to look like, go get that money. That's fine. That's what we're trying to do this Saturday again, because I do think there are some very, very high-level horses running in these races, especially on the two-year-old side. And then maybe we can catch some value in that Gopher Wand, and then we'll find out in that Cigar Mile if I'm right about the single. So, again, greensheetracing.com. Go check them out. At Sheet Racing on Twitter if you want to find their stuff there. We do start. The late pick five starts with race six. It's the grade two Demoiselle. This is the two-year-old filly race, mile and an eighth on the dirt, $250,000. Kudos to NYRA. A couple years ago, they started doing this where the filly races and the colt races, same payout. So if you bring your filly to New York, you get paid out the same as the colts. I've always thought that was the most fair way to do it, and frankly, the best way to ensure that you get a decent crowd, if you will. Excuse me. And so this ended up being a field of seven. There's a 3-5 favorite in here. I'm really, and that's from a race at Keeneland. And I'm always interested when people trust the form moving from, say, the Kentucky circuit to the New York circuit, because the surfaces are so, so different. And I think you have to use the three, Julia Shining, in this race. No question about it. Daughter of Curlin, AP Indy Mare on the bottom side, $175,000 for Stone Street to breed this horse. She's a homebred, of course, still running for them. Runs a, what did she run the first time out? Runs a 71 buyer the first time out. All of the things add up. She's going two turns for the first time here. And we're adding a full 2 furlongs on top of it. So I think once in a while, it's nice to look for another horse that's run a little bit longer. I think that Gambling Girl, who had a terrible last out for Todd Pletcher here at Aqueduct, if you go back and watch the race, man, she gets run into at the open. And if that doesn't happen for her this Saturday, I think she's got a real shot. Pletcher doesn't go grab Ired to stay on this horse if he doesn't think she has a serious shot. She's 8-1 on the morning line. I do not find it that number is going to hold up. They're hitting together at 26% right now. He and Luis Sias hit together at 24% over time. He puts Ired on his best horses, or his most likely winners, I should say. Great at putting horses in place. Remember, we're just trying to hit the top three.
Yep.
If she's 8-1, great. If she hits the top three, great. I don't need her to win. I need her to hit the top three. I think she can win. And so that's why I'm going to include her here. I'm tossing the last race because of that bump. If you go before that, runs a 7 furlong at Aqueduct, wins by a length of 3/4 in a listed stakes. Before that, breaks her maiden at Saratoga, 7 furlongs by over 10 lengths. If she didn't have that last start on here, it was just coming back from a run in September, she'd be like 3-1. But she gets bumped out of the gate the last time out, and all of a sudden she's 8-1. I'm not buying it. I think she's a better horse than that. So I'm going to play the 2 and the 6 here because, again, we're trying to get horses in that top 3. So we're going to play the 2 and the 6 in this race, and we're going to move on. Those are both the Pletchers, by the way, which in these 2-year-old races, you do get some of that where the same trainer has multiple within the trifecta. And so we'll move on to the late pick for race 7. The Sizzler Emerson. It is grade 2, mile and an eighth dirt. Open company here for 2-year-olds. All colts in this race. $250,000 on the line here. And this is about as royally bred as I can remember a Remsen being. This is Gunrunner. This is Street Sense. This is Justified. Yep. This is Frosted. This is Midnight Loot. This is Accelerate. And this is Good Magic. This is a very, very well-bred race. A very high-level race with a couple of absolute potential superstars in here. Tuskegee Airmen is in here. Hasn't gotten – is the horse that has the two-turn experience here because he goes the mile of Delaware. Over wet go, over that dirt. Loves it. It has won over dry dirt before at Parks, breaking his maiden in a maiden special weight at $102,000 before that on their big day in September. John Service is a very, very fine trainer. He and Luis Saez do not get together very often. They are 3 for their last 7. And he's been training this horse at Parks. It makes total sense. He'd ship up to Aqueduct for this one. In my opinion, I do think he's the favorite here, and I agree with the morning line maker that Arctic Arrogance, the 4, is right behind that 2-1, Linda Rice and Jose Lascano here. Two of them, about 16%, and it doesn't matter where they are. Huge sample size here, over 300 races the last little bit here. Horse has been actually running numbers-wise very well at the Belmont Training Track. I will be honest, have not watched this horse work. Have watched his races, though, last time out. Goes that mile at Aqueduct, and it's a one-turn mile, to be fair, but they start it. It's essentially the same as Churchill. You start in that chute, then you go one big turn around. Big sweeping turn at Aqueduct, so he's used to that. He's run there twice.
Yep.
Love that he has that experience. Broke his maiden, though, at Saratoga over wet go. So if we do have wet go, and I think it is going to be rainy in Ozone Park this weekend, another horse that did not mind the slop, ran an 80 speed figure last out in the Speedy Hollow. If he can just get that little bit extra distance, he is a son of Frosted, so he should be able to do it. He's got an Uncle Mo on the mom side. It's not like he can't go do it by pedigree. I absolutely trust that Linda Rice will have him ready. Even though she is 0-12 in her last graded stakes, which is very unusual for her. So I do go 2-4 here. I'm leaning on two trainers that are not huge on those numbers. I do think you have a chance, though, if you wanted to try to figure out another horse for this grand slam play where you're trying to pick a top 3 type of horse, you know, like the Danny Gargan trained WNL at the bottom there in the 7 with Jose Ortiz. Son of Good Magic, big time sale at Keeneland in September last year, $400,000. Think a lot of this horse. Breaks his maiden last time out in the slop at Aqueduct. Might be the kind of horse that you throw into your grand slam because you think, all right, if he likes the slop, maybe he'll eat it up this weekend. Even if he picks off third place, it doesn't matter in our sequence at this point. Yep. Gets you into that spot, keeps all those different combinations alive as well. So I did only play the 2 and the 4 in this part of the sequence, but I do see where you might want to include a horse like WNL, who's going to be in the 7 spot for trainer Danny Gargan. So go to the 8th race. This is the ladies' version of the Cigar Mile. It is the Gopher Wand. It's grade 3. $200,000 on the line here. It is a mile over that one-turn mile at Aqueduct coming out of the chute. It is a non-Lasix race, and you get a really, really interesting field for this one. And this is where I'm going to try to catch a price, and I'm trying to use a couple of local runners who are Aqueduct specialists and horses that are comfortable going over wet go. So I've got the 10 Bank Sting in the top here. Ran in the Iroquois last out at Aqueduct at 6.5 furlongs and just ran out of time. Literally just ran out of time, was closing at the end, finishes within a length and a quarter in second place with Joel Rosario, keeps Joel in the mount here behind November Rain. Man, if this race is a mile, she wins by open lengths. She just passes that horse for fun, frankly. And so if we can get 4-1 just because of the connections and the fact that she's a daughter of Central Banker, I mean, good luck with that. We're only going one turn here. I don't mind the Spites Town on that side. They obviously bred more for a one-term type horse. She's a fine, she's a fine mare. 8 wins, 13 lifetime runs, 6-for-8 at Aqueduct, and 4-for-7 in the slob. Love all of those numbers. So give me her on top, Bank Sting, at 4-to-1. Then I went to another local, Betsy Blue, the 8. Jose Lascano, Linda Rice again. Ran in that, in that Iroquois last time out. And look, she ran 4th. Yeah, by a length and a half, essentially. A length and 3/4, maybe. Before that, won an optional claimer over 7 furlongs at Aqueduct. Again, another horse that was flying at the end. If the 10 and the 8 do what they did in the last race, they're going to be the ones that are going to be together on the line. Again, in this leg, I only need them to finish in the top 3. That's right. Why I'm using them 4-to-1, 6-to-1. That kind of number, let's go get those horses involved right away. I do think the 3, Battle Bling, the favorite, is absolutely going to be part of the equation here. 1 at Laurel over Sloppy Go in the Twixt, 2 back in October, comes back at Aqueduct over Fasco in over the mile and an eighth. So going 2 turns, obviously the mile's not going to bother her. She's 1-for-5 lifetime, but I don't think going back to that distance is any problem. I think she's probably got the highest speed figure at the distance of anyone in the group. So I think she's going to be fine. 2-for-3 lifetime at Aqueduct. So to hit the board, absolutely. A win in 3 seconds over 5 goes over Wet Go in her career. Trust her to do that at least. And that's what we're looking for. So I do think Battle Bling needs to be part of it.
Well, and I mean, she's 2-for-5, right? So she's got 3 seconds. So she's got 2 wins, 3 seconds at Aqueduct. Like,
right.
Yep. This is a track.
Yeah. No, that's right. And I'm trying to use a bunch of locals, and that includes a horse that's only run once at Aqueduct, and that was last time out. Dr. B, the 7.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this horse, 4, 5, and 2 lifetime in 15 runs, hits the board all the time. 4-to-1 here. You get Irad Ortiz, knows the course extraordinarily well. Just won the riding title. I think that this is the kind of horse that definitely picks off a spot here. Second, first, second, the last 4 times out at Saratoga, at Parks, and at Aqueduct. Definitely a trustworthy horse here. Hasn't gone the mile distance, but ran really well last time, like I mentioned. Over 7 furlongs was another one of those horses. Closing at the end, she happened to run in the Pumpkin Pie, which is listed stakes, at the end of October. So she's coming in fairly fresh. They call this a sprinter route because this is 7 furlongs to a mile. I hate that distinction when we're going from 7 furlongs to a 1-turn mile. But Robert Reed does do that at 32%. So if you believe that stat, there you go. So I think that horse is another include too. So we're overbuying by one horse in this sequence, 10, 8, 3, and 7 for me. In race 8, I would definitely do that. So the last race is the Cigar Mile, grade 1.
This is the one, right? Like we get all these names we've heard.
And it's a very interesting race. If people are wondering, Obesos is not actually 99-1. He is not allowed to run in the race because of a quarantine issue at Churchill Downs. So he got halfway, the poor horse. Good God, they got him halfway. Apparently he's halfway through Pennsylvania. And they call him and say,
they had to turn around.
You had to turn around. Oh, it's the worst. You feel terrible for lots of people in that situation, frankly. This is a race where, again, we have to pick the winner here, right? By the way, grade 1, mile, at Aqueduct, 750K, 3-0.
Louis's second all-time favorite is in this race. Who is that? What's his name?
White Abario season. Now, this is where it gets really interesting. And what's cool is, so Matt Rybaltowski, friend of the show, called me around 7 tonight. And because I asked him if he could hang out last night for a segment for the show, and he was at a conference. Calling to apologize because I asked him like an hour before, like at 6 o'clock, if he could do something at 7. He couldn't. Matt, you're better than that. Don't be better than that. It's nice to talk to you. But the interesting thing here is White Abario won a grade 3. White Abario won a grade 1.
Mm-hmm.
And then if he wins this race, he's got 2 grade 1s and a grade 2.
Yep.
And by the way, they're at two of them are at Gulfstream Park, and then one's at Aqueduct against older horses. And that 3-year-old conversation is really interesting. He's got, to me, and I know, and look, if this is fanboy stuff, whatever, that's fine. Go ahead and throw me. He was top 3 in the Ohio Derby.
With a 106 Equibase, too. Like, that was a really hard run. Nice run.
So he wins the Florida Derby. He wins the Holy Bowl. He runs 3rd in the Kentucky Jockey Club as a 2-year-old. So obviously that doesn't count.
Yep.
For his 3-year-old campaign. But this is what we're talking about with him. And by the way, if you've ever wondered why I asked the question about Edgar Morales and who's your filly, this horse started with Edgar Zayas. This is a jockey. He's a very fine jockey.
Yep.
But the second they needed a serious high level jockey, they went to Tyler Gaffney. They just did. And I get it.
And then and
that's what I worry about for Edgar.
Like, oh, we have Tyler. Now we're stepping up again. We're going to
Ireland. I worry about that for Edgar because I think he's really coming into his own. And Hoosier Philly is the kind of horse that helps you come into your own for sure. Just get out of the way, let the horse do the work. But a horse like Guadabario, clearly in the top three if he wins this race. I don't think he does. Yeah. But if he does, bleep it. Especially if he doesn't slop at Aqueduct. Good God, I guess all the horses, let's go. That would be amazing. I think Zandon's a worthy 1-to-1 favorite here, and I'm going to use him as a single. And this is the horse we're going to lean on in our sequence. It won't pay as much as if another horse hits. I get it. If you want to chase a different kind of price, go do it. Totally fine. I think if you're going to do that, you do it with Get Her Number, the 4-horse here, who's 5-for-14 lifetime. Or you go down to Mind Control, the 7, who loves the course. Loves Aqueduct. 4-for-7 lifetime. Never missed the board. 99 speed figure at the course. Ran 100 speed figure last time out. DQ'd into a win last time at Parks in the Dirt Million. Or the Dirt Mile, excuse me, the Listed Stakes there. To me, he's kind of in every other, and this is the every other where he doesn't win.
Yep.
And so I'm wondering if, you know, they gave him a little bit of time off here. I don't hate this as a spot for him to come back, actually, because he knows Aqueduct. He's very comfortable there. Pletcher's not putting him there by accident. He and John Velasquez, obviously a formidable duo in that way. But I do think Zandon's the best and fastest horse in this group. And I think he's got a late kick that other horses here don't have. There's going to be early speed in this race. Yeah. Guadabario is going to try to be part of the early pace, right? Get Her Number is going to try to be out front. I think that Outlier's only chance in this race is to get a lead and kick a bunch of dirt in people's faces and pray to God it works.
100%.
Mind Control has been either in front or in second place in many of his very best runs.
Well, and I so wish he's going wish to try Mike to do that as well. So that we can give him a hard time. Because three races ago, Mind Control knocked out Hot Rod Charlie with a 118.
That's super high level stuff for sure. I agree. Yeah, ran a 104 in the Salvatore Mile. I agree. Yeah, for sure. And so, you know, 1-for-3 lifetime over the slop too. I mean, he's done it before, so it's not like he can't do it. He's a 6-year-old horse, ton of experience. He's not a Grade One horse, but I don't think if this is a Grade One field. To me, this is a Grade Two. Yeah, it's a Grade Two field. I think that's fair.
I mean, you go through the numbers and the winners, and you're right. It's Grade Two. It's like maybe like a 2.2 in some cases, right? Like you've just it leans more two than one, or more three than one, right? Like
more three than one is right. That's absolutely correct. And so I'm gonna lean on Zandon here. I do think, you know, who do you lose to? Taba, Epicenter.
I know.
Then in the Derby. Before that, though, wins over a slightly wet track of the Bluegrass at Keeneland. And that, by the way, Zach, I thought about this a lot. When we were at Keeneland for the Breeders' Cup, they never changed the track from being fast, but they had to put down so much water to stop it from blowing away on Saturday.
The whole time.
That it was essentially wet fast or good.
Yep.
And I am not claiming foul. I'm not doing any of that stuff with Keeneland. I'm not mad about it, but no, I do think you could have said, look, folks, we've had to put a lot of water down here. I mean, I think the giveaway there is that freaking Flight Line doesn't run a sub 2-minute mile and quarter, and he actually had to do work. And so that's kind of the giveaway to me. What that gives me hope for is going to Aqueduct on a heavier course that Zandon, who broke his maiden at Belmont, is going to get back to a course like that. Even if it's wet, he'll be fine. And so I think Zandon's your single here in the sequence. And all of that is in the sheet, by the way. It's a $16 ticket, which means you can play with it a lot more and try to find more combinations than that. I try to give people the skeleton, the A ticket that I would use in those cases. Last week, by the way, that $18 ticket, like I said, hit for something in the mid-50s. I think that if we can hit this, especially if that third leg comes through and we hit a couple, like maybe two or three of those, we could hit this 6-7 times, something like that, and really get a nice payout on this where, you know, if it's $18, $20 for the payout on it and we hit it 6-7 times, we're, you know, $140, $150 kind of bucks for a $16 ticket. To me, that's a good, fun kind of way to play the sequence. Obviously, you can play the late pick 5. You can play the $1 pick 6 up in Naira. I think it's one of the best traditional pick sixes in the country. They do a great job with it. And so obviously go ahead and go do that. For all the other races, though, that are going on, go check out greensheetracing.com and all of our friends and the handicappers that hang out over there. So just a little bit of a setup for the show for the next little bit, because, you know, Mike kind of didn't ask me what I was going to do and then preview the next 2 months. And so so obviously we're still going to be talking about races around the country, because it's something that we've always tried to do on the show. We try to be national. We try to celebrate the you know, like next week we want to talk Los Al, and I'm hoping Jose can jump on with us, and yeah. You know, Matt Dinnerman's been on with us a bunch from the Bay Area with Golden Gate, and then you know, with the Horseshoe folks, with Churchill, with whatever. I mean, we've had people from all over, and so it's not you know, we don't think of ourselves as being just a Kentucky show, even though we do love the racing here, and I hit the pick for the turf player last night. But it's a so Zach, dude, I am so glad that freaking track is back.
I know.
I'm so at home with that freaking place. I mean, it's just the skinniest tickets. I'm playing pick fours for $1.50, $2. It's just the best. I mean, it's, thank God for Turfway Park. It just makes my winter so much
better. Yeah, it's going to be an amazing season at Turfway. And
their smallest purse for a stakes race is $125,000.
Yeah.
Tonight, they're running an $80,000 allowance and two $70,000 main special. I mean, dude, when I moved here, the average race was like $7,000 on a purse. I mean, it just was. And so, you know.
And Turfway was dirty at that point. Like, now it's like this beautiful new stadium. Like, we went out and saw it right before the Breeders' Cup. And you're starting to see these large racing organizations starting to update their fields. And it's going to be, you know, we could argue that we're going to go into maybe, you know, the second or third golden age of horse racing in the United States, where we've got a lot of field expansion. You've got the online expansion for betting, you know.
We certainly have the opportunity, and that is the you know, sort of the cause celeb for a lot of us who love this thing, is that, you know, we got to get more people into it. In 2 weeks, we'll talk to Matt Rybaltowski from US Bets, and he and I both agree that the deal that Churchill just struck with DraftKings could be an absolute game changer for what they do.
And, yeah, that's going to be a good conversation.
And I think even if they can churn the $2 bet, I think once young people realize they don't have to spend $50 to make money on horse racing, there is an opportunity to get people in the door where they realize they can spread $50 out over a 5-hour period and have a ton of fun. And and within that $50, because they hit a couple of races, they're actually churning $200, $250, $300. And it can turn into a lot of fun when you bet that way. So, again, go find my Grand Slam bet for Cigar Mile Saturday at aqueductgreensheetracing.com or at your local store if you're here in Louisville or other places. Lots of opportunities. I head up to the corner every week and try to buy one. Some weeks I'm lucky. Some weeks I get there a little too late, apparently. And so go check that out as well. Zach, I appreciate you, my friend. I don't know. Do we have music to get out of here? Or we just get
yes,
out of here?
Absolutely.
Okay.
All right. I do want to say, listeners, this next year, we have a lot more big things planned. So we're looking forward to 2023. All right. Thanks so much. Right. Listen to the Horse Racing Happy Hour.
Good night, everybody.
Closing time.